Anya Fallenkamp is a political analyst, interfaith activist, project manager, and event organizer. Celebrating religious diversity is important to her work and life, including the importance of political discussions without letting prejudices or assumptions blur our own views of our fellow human beings. When you know someone, she says, it's hard to dislike them. And out of this, she started an interfaith music festival. It's fascinating. Take a listen.
This is a Religica production. R-E-L-I-G-I-C-A.
I've actually studied political science. Currently, I serve at the German Foreign Ministry in the cultural department. That is my daytime job, but my nighttime hero activity is actually being an interfaith activist. Well, I guess I've been in interfaith forever because I grew up in an interfaith family. My mom's family is Jewish, my dad's family is Christian, though he converted to Judaism as well. And I've been specifically in the field of interfaith dialogue since 2011. When I enrolled in a youth leadership program in the UK during my studies called Parliamenters by the Faith and Belief Forum, formerly called the Three Faiths Forum. That was really cool, a youth leadership program. It was around the same time that I also became active in the student society at SOAS University, where I was studying at the time. SOAS, that's School of Oriental and African Studies in London. And I just felt that if I wanted to speak about my faith as a Jew, it was automatically politicized and I was asked to state my stance on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And I mean, my faith has been politicized my entire life. You can't live in Germany and speak about being a Jew without being asked about the Holocaust and how your grandparents survived it and all that. But in the UK, it was still a different thing because I felt like the interest in my religion as such was diminished by the whole politics going on around it. And it also made it difficult for me to actually meet people from other religions and learn about them, which I've always been very eager and interested in doing. So I wanted to create sort of activity by students for students that would allow us to learn about each other's religions and celebrate religious difference and diversity without it leading to polarization automatically. I'm not saying that political discussion is bad. I've studied politics for 7 years. I think it's really important to have political discussions, but I think it's also important to not let prejudices or assumptions, you know, blur your view of someone else as a human being primarily. It may be also interesting that I've lived in Israel for a year and I've had many Jewish and Arab-Palestinian friends, Muslims, Christians. And I really always found that when you know someone as a person, it's much harder to dislike them even if you have a difference of opinion. So I really value that personal contact, personal experiences. So I came up with the idea at SOAS University in London to do an interfaith music festival. It's because I come from a musical family, so I always relate to music as something that allows me to connect to the spiritual realm, but also to my fellow human beings. In Judaism, music is something that has a lot to do with community, how a community relates to each other and connects. Even a lot of people don't understand Hebrew, or they don't read or write Hebrew, and it's hard for them to participate in the prayer through the words, but they can still participate through the music, hum along, feel the energy of the community. So I think music is something really powerful. And I wanted to mobilize that tool for interfaith understanding.
Do you play any musical instruments?
I learned to play the piano and a little bit of the clarinet and guitar, but I mainly like to sing, not on stage necessarily. In that sense, I'm better at organizing musical events than being on stage myself. But at SOAS University, I basically had the idea, let's do an interfaith music festival. The university is really well known for its expertise on the Middle East, Asia, and Africa. They don't just do studies of politics or studies of religions, but also they have a music faculty. And they have a lot of instruments from all over the world, especially non-Western instruments. So I thought that is a really huge resource. And I just asked my fellow students who would like to share some music from their religious backgrounds at a joint music festival. A lot of people came. The first festival took place in April 2012. We realized that it wasn't just students. Half of the room was actually people who had nothing to do with the university, but they learned that members of their communities were presenting and sharing their music, and they were so proud of it that they actually came along, they participated in the festival, and they also stayed to listen to the other performances. And the university loved the festival and asked me to do it again the next year. And I was, of course, happy to do it because it was an amazing experience. And that's when I also realized the feedback from the communities was we were actually missing a forum like that, a forum where we can just, you know, get to know each other without having to talk, without having to discuss politics, just like meeting each other as human beings, and music really allows you to do that. So we added not just music, but dance elements to the festivals in the following years. The festivals have been taking place in London annually since then. So we've had this year the 7th annual London Interfaith Music Festival. In 2016, the festival moved from the university to the British Museum, which is something I'm actually really proud of because it's like the most visited destination in the whole UK. It's a huge, beautiful museum, and it's been hosting our festival in London since 2016.
That's awesome. I'm curious, with the move to the British Museum, and this being part of the, you know, the British Museum of London, is this now the London Festival beyond the SOAS Festival?
Yes. It became the London Festival long before the move out of the university. I would say by the third year, most of the participants weren't students or people related to the university anymore. It was just the place where it was still happening. We've had over 25 different religions represented at the festival. I'd say 30 different faith communities at least present, probably more than that. Every festival now features between 20 and 30 performances. So imagine it like one stage and you'll have one act after the other come on, and every act allows you to enter into a world of a different religion and experience it through their music or through their dance. So you'll hear from a Christian gospel choir, next you'll see a Jewish dance group, then you'll hear the meditation and prayers of Jain nuns, and then you'll see some Polynesian dances from Hawaii and Tahiti. So it's really diverse, and it's something that the different faith communities of London have really come to embrace, which is really remarkable also because we've never really had any money to do the festival. So it's all in kind. Even the British Museum is really generously hosting the festival, providing the venue and the technical costs. But I do the work voluntarily. The artists perform for free. So, and we haven't got any money to advertise the festival either. So it's a lot of word of mouth. And it's incredible how many people the festival has drawn over the past years. I mean, at the British Museum, you get more than 15,000 people in a day coming and experiencing the festival. If you want, I can also share some information about how the festival has moved outside of the UK.
Yes.
So in 2013, I moved back to Berlin. I've actually continued to organize the London Festival remotely and just travel there for the day or the weekend. So when I moved back to my hometown of Berlin, which is where I'm from, I thought, you know, we need the same festival that I've been doing in London. We need that here because right-wing populism has been on the rise. People are voting right-wing parties. People feel comfortable voicing Islamophobic or anti-Semitic views in public on the media, and it's really scary.
Yeah.
Especially being a granddaughter of Holocaust survivors, I feel like the way people speak about Muslims in public isn't different than they were speaking about Jews 80 years ago. And that's something I want to tackle. It's something that I want to address. And I feel like the kind of festival that we do is one way of doing it. And it's not just a way of making religion or religious people approachable as human beings, but it's also a way of empowering the communities themselves. Make them understand that they have allies, that they're not alone, because that's what the festival also does. It unites people. Also, it's quite important that at the Interfaith Community Fair, we brief the communities that the purpose of the fair is not to proselytize, so they aren't supposed to advertise their religion or try to make people convert to their faith, but that it's supposed to be about sharing information and offering a human point of contact that can answer questions. Because I think that's the most important thing, just reducing fear. And I would say a lot of people participating at the festival or attending, they aren't really religious or necessarily even interested in religion as such. But, you know, if you see a dance festival that showcases music of a lot of different religions, that's at the same time a world music festival. So there is an appeal of the festival to people who don't even have an interest in religion. It's about normalizing religion as such and reducing people's fear of religion and of religious people.
Do you have any very interesting stories that maybe came specifically to that last example you mentioned of like normalizing people's experiences with, you know, the wide range of traditions around the world, especially when it comes to countering misconceptions or prejudice?
One story that I like that happened to me was 2 years ago at the Berlin Festival. We've had an attendee who came and he was complaining quite loudly about the fact that we weren't offering any pork at any of the food stalls. And he said, you know, pork is the favorite meat of the Germans. So you talk about tolerance and inclusion, but you don't include the favorite meat of the Germans, you know. And I tried to mirror what he was saying to him. And I said, well, maybe a lot of Germans like Muhammad caricatures, but I'm also not going to show those, even though that might be what the majority appreciates or condones. Because this is about trying something different, and it's about trying to be respectful to everyone. So you're welcome to join in, you're welcome to hear and experience, you're welcome to try some of this beautiful halal kebab from our Persian friends here, or some Indian vegetarian curry. Or you can go around the corner outside, you know, get yourself your currywurst that has lots of pork in it, and then you can come back and experience anyway, you know. But if you want to share the experience, like, just try, you know, you're welcome. Pork isn't forbidden. We just chose not to offer it. Anyway, later on, I saw the same person, you know, kind of moving along rhythmically to the performance of this Muslim group, a really sweet group of young Arab immigrants in Germany. They perform really beautiful, very rhythmical music, singing in Arabic to it. It's one of the audience's favorite. And I saw the same guy who was complaining about the lack of pork at our interfaith buffet, you know, kind of enjoying himself in the music. And it felt like that personal experience, like just experience the music, experience the humanness of these people on stage, helped him to grow beyond his first instinct of, you know, complaining about having to try something different or so. Like, I think experiencing the music of a group that you don't know, but like kind of enjoying it, it helps you transform your view, your prejudices about others. Another story that I like, We've had at one of our Berlin festivals this gospel choir. Now, in Germany, a gospel choir isn't your African black gospel choir. Actually, this one was from a community in the south of Berlin, kind of wealthy community, at a local evangelical church. So this is basically elderly white German ladies trying to sing gospel music and moving, you know, in a kind of German robotic way along. But it's really sweet and they're trying, you know, and we've included them at the festival and it was really lovely. After them performing was one of our friends. He's originally from South Africa, a reggae artist who's part of the Rastafari faith community. And these German grannies, they love that African Rasta man so much that after the festival, I found out they've actually invited him to do a workshop with them and help infuse them with a little bit more, I don't know, groove. And they did a workshop, Gospel Goes Reggae. And then they've actually repeated the workshop until they did joint performances together with that African Rasta man. And, you know, I'm sure that a lot of these women, gospel was their only way before that to connect with any black communities. I don't know if many of these ladies have black people in their everyday life, because in Germany, of course, we have black communities, but they aren't as large as in the UK or in the US, other places. But I can assure you that doing a two-day workshop, not getting to know this South African immigrant, this musician, and spending time around this very charismatic, very lovely person, that this was a transformative experience. The gospel choir doubled in size and in membership size since it has done these workshops with this reggae artist. And all these women, I've seen joint performance of them at a music festival in Berlin. They were glowing on stage, and like how that energy infused them, you know. I'm sure that if any of them had any reservations or even prejudices about black people, that they must have disappeared through that time that they spent personally with that guy. And it's so lovely to know that they've actually met at our festival, you know, and they've experienced him through his music, through his performance. So that's another really like nice story that I like to look back at. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like both seem like really good stories. I really like the second one you mentioned. power music. I'm curious also, like you mentioned your day job, mm-hmm. as well, working in the Foreign Service. And this is, I guess, your night job where you're actively...
My nighttime hero job.
Working and engaging with this global interfaith music community engagement. And I'm interested in learning if you've seen any crossover in any of the work that you're doing, in terms of, have you seen within the Foreign Service people being very intrigued and in terms of wanting to learn more about global faith traditions through music as a discussion point that has come up, or vice versa, where people, I mean, I know that music festivals are avoiding politics, but they are helping people have a better understanding of the globe.
Yeah. And I mean, it doesn't mean that they don't have a political message, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, both in the UK and Germany, we've done festivals in Italy as well, mm-hmm. in times where people have been voting for right-wing populist parties. So there is a very clear political message. Mm-hmm. A message that concerns our immediate environment, which is that we stand for diversity and we stand against hatred and racism. When I speak about not having so much politics at the festival, I mean we're not going to solve the Middle East conflict in Berlin. That is what I'm talking about. You know, we're not going to solve the human rights situation in Iran at our festival or in China. But it doesn't mean that we don't actually comment on the politics that directly concern us in our own countries. And I think that's a very important thing not to forget. Working at the Foreign Office, I must say that even though I've spoken to a lot of people about my work personally, and I think a lot of people find that approach quite appealing, in general, as most structures, as most universities, as most government institutions, culture is seen as something. Well, actually, the German Foreign Service tries to use cultural... I actually work in the cultural department at the Foreign Office.
Okay.
And I can say that the German Foreign Ministry also invests quite some resources into using culture as a way to reach out to civil societies, as a tool to also implement a political... I wouldn't say agenda, but to help further democracy and everything. But the connection between religion and music hasn't really been made. There is an office that deals with the religion's responsibility for peace, and they do exactly what most interfaith organizations do so far, which is academic conferences, talks, old white people talking to each other, which I regret because I don't think that's the most sustainable approach. And I hope that the approach that I pursue with Faiths in Tune and our music festivals is one that is going to be heard more and going to be amplified more in the future. So maybe at this point I can invite anybody who would like to have our kind of music festival in their city or their country to partner up with us and invite us, and we'll come and we'll do a Faiths in Tune festival in your city.
You have been listening to Religica. Visit us at www.religica.org.